Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, YouTube, wherever you're catching us. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And because we're going extra punk tonight, I brought back my former co-host, but friend forever, the lead singer of Piss Ants, Josie Katz.
Hello, everybody.
All right.
This is very exciting.
It's very exciting for me. I never thought this would happen. It's very, what an honor. What a guest.
Life is strange.
If you hang out with Josie Cat, that's definitely true.
There you go. It's all coming home to roost.
Always an adventure.
Yeah.
And speaking of adventure, I am so honored to have on the show tonight just a legendary musician that just rocked the crowd of 100,000 or however many in Coachella, the founding member, co-writer of all your favorite songs from this band, the Sex Pistols, also played with the Damned, played with Iggy Pop, currently is playing with Blondie, played with the Faces. You've played with three Rock and Roll Hall of Fame bands, and he's still going strong and has a new album coming out. And I've listened to it, and it's great. I can't believe I'm talking to you. Somebody that has informed my youth and Josie's youth and basically youth, Glenn Matlock.
Thank you, but hang on a second. I know I'm no spring chicken, but you're making me sound like a museum relic. I'm not. There's still life in the old dog yet. I'm only kidding, but yeah. You know.
You're not a relic. You're busier than ever.
It seems like that. Well, I don't know why. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. Although biscuit, we'd say biscuit in England, but it doesn't rhyme with crumble. So, well, it's not rhyming. It's alliterations, isn't it? I do like a little bit of a... God, blimey, I think I've had too much coffee already.
So where did you guys record this last album that you just released?
Well, I recorded the majority of it in London. Well, in fact, it was all recorded in London, but all the loud bits, you know, the drums and the guitars and the bass and all the things that the neighbours would have to put their fingers in their ears for were done just before lockdown. So it's a few years back now, but I hadn't finished all the lyrics and stuff. You know, everybody's got home studio these days, which I took it back through. Back home to work on and sort of revisit that. And also I recorded it when I recorded it because the availability of musicians, Earl Slick, there's a big mate of mine and a fantastic guitarist, but don't tell him that. Right.
Okay.
Well, he knows anyway, right? But he was in London, so I had to seize the opportunity, and I also got Norman Rockroy to play bass on the album. I mainly play rhythm guitar on it and sing, although through lockdown, I kind of revisited some of the vocals I'd already done, and I thought I could improve upon it, which I did do. And when lockdown lifted, I went to a friend's studio, and I'd also written a couple of other songs by then, which one's the first track on the album, one's the last track on the album. And lockdown was still a little bit dodgy then, and I was speaking to Clem Burke on the phone, and we'd been doing a few things, like charity things online with musicians from all around the world who never met up. I said, any chance you can put some drums down for me? And he went into a studio in Los Angeles and sent me the drum track back, you know, to a guitar part. And then I reworked that up and it sounds fine. I don't think you'd really tell the difference between what was recorded where and when, unless I just opened my big mouth and let the cat out of the bag. So.
Right. And good mastering always, if you have someone who does good mastering job to tie it all together.
Yeah,
that doesn't matter, really.
It does help, but I've also got a good rapport with a guy called Mario McNulty that El Slick introduced me to, and he'd worked with him on David Bowie's last band album, the Dark Star album, and we've done a few things together over the years, and he recorded my previous album, Good To Go, which El plays on, Slip Jim Phantom. It's a little bit more of a slightly rockabilly Americana kind of album. But I sent everything to him in New York, and he mixed it in New York. So it's kind of got a bit of a transatlantic kind of quality to it. But Mario's a great lad. You know, he does some great work. So, yeah.
I love the rockabilly vibe on the new album. It has, it really makes you want to, you know, swing dance and put up your pompadour and
okay. Well, look, I was trying to do that, but my hair's gone a bit floppy today. Find that girl.
And by the way, Clem Burke is the drummer for Blondie, if people don't know.
Yeah.
And you guys have been mates for a long time.
And you've worked with Clem with the International Swingers.
Yeah, we did that, and we've done loads of other projects together over the years. So we've got quite a good rapport as a rhythm section. And in fact, this coming Saturday, I'm not sure when your program's going up, but we're going to play at the Roxy. We've done all the Blondie stuff, and I wanted to sort of an album launch. And Clem volunteered to play drums, which is fantastic of him. And, I said, who else can we pick up in LA? Because my main band's in England. And he said, how about Gilby Clark? So Gilby Clark's going to play. And there's a guy called Steve Fishman, who's an old friend, who's going to play bass. And then we got some people getting up, like Kathy Valentine. Fred Armisen's going to do a tone. So it should be a fun night, you know.
Cool. Come on. Not a shabby lineup.
Yeah.
I love how Fred Armisen, you know, like I always known him as a comedian, but he plays with everybody in the music community. He really gets around and he's quite talented. It's pretty cool. I mean, you know,
coming from Clem told me he's a really good drummer. So coming from Clem, that says a lot, you know. So,
well, yeah, Clem's one of the best.
Well, when did you first meet Clem?
I think I first met him. Do you know what? I think I first met him. I did a one-off gig with Sid Vicious called The Vicious White Kids.
Right.
In about early 1979. And it's when Blondie, you know, what I've always liked about Blondie is, you know, if you're touring in another country and then you have a night off and stuff, bands tend to go their separate ways because they've had enough of each other. But you used to see Blondie out as a band, all of them. And they all came to the show. And I think I met Clem for the first time then, and we sort of struck up a rapport, and we've kept in touch ever since. You know, when he comes to London, he hangs out, he stays with me. I'm actually staying with him now, which is very kind of him.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. That's a lot of people are shocked to find out when they get into the whole Sex Pistols legend, is that you and Sid, there was apparently no animosity, and I even played a fun gig one night.
Yeah, and it was to kind of prove we weren't total enemies. I mean, there was a little bit of frisson, but you know, we were different. I'm a bass player. Sid was like a showman. He weren't a bad singer, but he was a singer, so in a different way to say John. John's got the gift of the gab and wrote some fantastic lyrics and had a sort of Jonathan Swiftian kind of quality. Sid didn't at all, but in a way he was kind of like a punk rock Elvis. He could sing other people's songs and put in a good performance. I don't mean that he sounded like Elvis, but it was that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
He's no Bob Dylan, you know.
Since we're talking about that, what did you think about the series that came out?
I was a bit disappointed in it, to be honest. I think it could have been really good. And it wasn't in the end. I wasn't happy with my portrayal in the way that I left the band. I left the band. There's this whole thing about saying I was sacked, and it's just not true. So, and I was annoyed because I had a load.
Oh,
of
that's a shame.
I had a load of conversations with Danny Boyle about that, and I was assured it weren't going to come out like that, and he did. So, I'm not happy with him. But I saw him afterwards, about this time ish last year, at a red carpet thing in Hollywood, and he knows exactly what I think about him, and it rhymes. But you know those boats that
it rhymes with
that you have to do with a pole. You know, flat bottom boats, and you have to push it along with a pole as opposed to rowing it. They're called punts, and it rhymes with that, right?
So Danny Boyle, what you think of him rhymes with punt.
Yeah.
And you helped secure the music.
So there you go. You know. Maybe more for me, but you know, I thought it was important that Steve, who formed the band in the first place, got to tell his story. But anyway, there you go. I think it's been and gone now, so I'm going to move on from that. I don't think about like folks like you asked me about it, you know. So,
well, what I thought was weird about it, to be honest, it looked like the Chrissy Hynde story. It's like, why don't you just do that? Like that, there was more about Chrissy Hynde than there was about you when you were in the band.
You know what? I'm friends with Chrissy. I see her in the local coffee shop. We're in the park when she's walking her dog, and we were chatting about it. And she said, Well, you know, it's a bit weird. I only shagged him once.
And I know you've been asked this question a million times, but since I'm actually talking to you, let's set the record straight.
All right.
You were not fired from the Sex Pistols for liking the Beatles. You were not fired from the Sex Pistols for washing your feet.
Oh, there we go. No,
I mean, you quit.
Me and John didn't get on, you know, and I think what I'd done in the band it contributed to the album, you know. It'd been great if it worked out, but it didn't. But I will say this, we've reformed 2, 3, or 4 times over the years, especially we did a big world tour, the Filthy Luca tour in 1996, and they could have asked any other bass player in the world to do it, and they asked me. So I kind of feel vindicated.
How did you get that call, and what did you think when you got it?
Well, actually, I was in Los Angeles at the time, and I hadn't spoken to Steve for 17 years, and my friend I was staying with, he said, what are you going to do? You know, we'd been working on a project, and it had finished, and so I said, maybe I wouldn't mind seeing Steve. And then the next day, he said, here's Steve's number, right? And he said, call him. And I went, maybe not just now. And it went on for a few days. And he kept saying, call Steve. Anyway, I called him up. And Steve went, oh, I've heard he was in town. Come over. And as soon as I got there, he said, let's go and see John. And it's like, oh. That was in 95, towards the end of 95. And it set the ball rolling. Early 96, we had a world tour lined up, so it was all kind of a bit last minute. The only drag was that in 95, I'd made an album for Creation Records called Who's He Think He Is When He's At Home. And it was pretty good, but it kind of got lost in all the Pistol stuff coming out. You know, it wasn't due to come out until 96. And then we did a big world tour and people thought I was trying to cash in. But when I made the record, I hadn't even heard about the Sex Pistols getting back together again. The way it goes, you know.
And you were on Creation, which at the time was a huge label.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, great.
Oasis was on it.
Oasis were on it, and Primal Scream, who were mates of mine. In fact, I've done a few little things with Primal Scream, but we did about 10 years or more ago now. We did a one-off band doing all covers like Trog songs, MC5, early Kink, stuff like that. We did a festival under the name Silver Machine. And it was Zach Starkey on drums, me on bass, and then Little Barry, Andrew Innes, and Bobby Gillespie is the front three. And it was good, and I'd love to do another one, but Zach found some footage and I just posted it up on my Instagram page with a few tracks, and it's really good. So there you go. I think I'm going to start a petition going, reform Silver Machine. You know, it was just right, that'll do. It's good. It's kind of upmarket garage rock, if that makes sense. Yeah, you can't work.
It does make sense.
It makes sense to Josie, but I don't know if that's saying anything. Go ahead, Josie. You were going to ask.
Oh, fuck you, Mark. are you gonna tour this new album?
Yeah, I've got this one show because I'm here. I was already here doing the Blondie thing, so we're gonna do the show here. I've got shows back in England and Europe and sort of personal appearance, record store things, and then we're setting up more shows, and then hopefully I've been asked to do a couple of things here in late summer, the fall, and through the rest of the year. So I'm just working it all out now. But it's down to what kind of reaction I get on the album. But so far, it's been really positive. So I'm feeling quietly encouraged because I like playing with other people. It's good, you know, especially with Blondie. You get to do really big shows and have, you know, guest artists like Nile Rodgers get up. That's fun. But, you know, my songs are my babies. That's my kind of... I see there's two kind of strings to my career. There's like being an artisan, you know, like being a bass player, which is kind of cool, you know, like being a painter or a master craftsman, that's all right. But my artistness or my art is songwriting. That's the way I see it. And of course, that's, you know, foremost in my mind. You know, it's when you write a song, I don't mind. If people love it, great. If they don't like it, that's fine. But when people haven't heard that you got something out and listened to it and made a decision, that's kind of galling, you know. And you don't want to make a record and leave it on a cassette in the drawer that never sees the light of day. But now, you know, I'm getting a good reaction from stuff. And it's funny, you know, you sort of bigging me up. I did this and I did all that. But it doesn't necessarily mean a record company is going to throw $1 million at you to have an album out next week. It don't work like that. You know, the world.
Especially now.
But you know what? The whole lockdown thing, it was frustrating. But what it kind of did, everybody, whether you was big or small, was in the same boat. So it became a bit of a level playing field, then it's how you roll with that. Well, I rolled with it by finishing off an album and getting a way to release it and stuff. And here we are today, you know, talking to you two, which is lovely.
Do you, when you write, do you write the music first or the lyrics first?
Bit of both, really. I tend to write most songs just walking down the street. You see something, a little tune comes to your head. If you forget it, well, then I forget it because.
It wasn't worth it.
Well, yeah, if you want to write a catchy song and you can't remember it yourself, how do you expect anybody else to, you know? But when those ideas don't go away and become little earworms, it gets annoying, you know, you can't think straight. And that's the time to pick up a guitar or make a little demo of it or stuff. And then you've got half the idea and you think, oh, what comes next? And, you know, you're off on this road of discovery. And then you might have 12, 14, 16 songs that haven't come out, and then that's like filling your mind up of stuff, and you got to release it somehow, because it's like clearing out the wardrobe at home, you know, or tidying your room, you know, there's all these bits of things kind of throttled all over the place and you can't find a way to the door, so get it out, move on to the next thing.
Right. My room's not tidy, that's why I have a green screen. Josie, is that your writing process? Do you come up with songs like that?
Yeah, it's usually the song first, just because I don't play, you know, guitar, so, or piano, to compose it first.
So how do you do it?
Sometimes
you get somebody to work with you to help work out the musical.
Yeah, thing. I have a writing partner that I've worked with for 25 years, and sometimes we'll sit together and I'll have an idea, and then we'll put the parts together on acoustic guitar and then go from there.
Right.
How did it work with the Sex Pistols, Glenn? Because I, you know, as a graded guitar player, Steve Jones is, I mean, I would say you, from what I understand, you wrote most of the music, but was he like doubling what you were doing on bass, or what happened?
Well, when he recorded it, he sort of did his version of it, a bit simplified. It sounds all right, but I wouldn't really call it bass playing. It's like guitar and they're a bass player. So there's a bit more to it than that. I think my main thing, if you check out Anarchy, it's kind of got quite a bit more going on. There's all these octaves things, and then in the last verse, in fact, I did a show. In fact, it was probably the very last Pistol show we ever did in Spain, and it was a festival in Vitoria in Spain, in the Basque Country, and Duff McKagan was there with his band Loaded, and he came up to me. He said, "Wow, Glenn," he said, "all that, you do all this kind of Tamla Motown stuff. It's great, you know." So the Pistols thing, I thought he gave it a bit more kind of colour somehow. You know, if you look at one of my favourite bass players, there's a few, but Entwistle's great, and you know his bass work, especially on like my generation, it's really clever, and it just makes the song go somewhere else, you know.
Right, John Entwistle of the Who, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you prefer writing over performing, or are they?
It's all part and parcel of the same.
Separate
thing.
Compartments.
What I do like is when I do shows, and I do different size shows all around the world, and I actually do quite a lot of acoustic shows, you know, an evening with Glenn Matlock kind of thing, and I've done Glastonbury and the Montreux Jazz Festival, that. What I do like is, you know, when people are up close and it's just you and a guitar, and it's scary, but you do it, and if you do it and sort of bring the thing off, you know, you get hairs on your chest for pulling off. But, you know, when people dig a song that you wrote 40 years ago or 40 days ago that was just purely a figment of your imagination when you were sitting with a guitar in your bedroom or your squat or your living room and dig it, that's a buzz. And I think that's what kind of pushes me forward. And anything else, you know, in terms of what band I have or if I'm playing with somebody else, it's just all building up to that kind of the apex of somebody digging your song, really. So that's what inspires me.
Well, I just saw a video of you at Coachella with Nile Rodgers in front of everybody, and you seem to be having a great time.
I was, it was good. And what was good about it was that we had a little run through and then it went a bit wrong. But I was quite happy that I knew the song a bit better than Noel. He covered very well. Nobody would have really...
There seemed to be a couple cheeky looks there, I saw.
Yeah, but I think it's a bit like, how's it go? Well, it goes like this, you know. You might be looking at me, you're looking at what I'm actually playing.
Well, Glenn, it's been such an honor to talk to you. I saw you guys 20 years ago at the Greek Theater.
Oh, yeah.
The Sex Pistols. It was a great show.
It was a good show. It's a great place. And in fact, I got to revisit it because between the two Coachella shows, we did a Blondie show then. Wednesday a week ago. So, yeah, it's good night.
Oh, that's right. You did. Yeah, I was out of town. Josie, I'm sure you have something to say about how the Sex Pistols affected your life. Maybe the first time you heard Anarchy.
Definitely. They were very formative. I'm curious what is on Glenn's playlist nowadays. You know, what do you listen to? Because I know, you know, throughout the years, my personal taste, I always love the bands that, you know, for example, like the Sex Pistols, The Damned. But now I find that on my playlist, I'm listening to a lot of reggae. You know, our taste evolves and we always love to hear a classic. But then what is stuck on your playlist now that you love?
At the moment, I haven't really had a lot of time to listen to a lot of music. It doesn't mean I don't listen to it, because you can't go in a shoe shop or somewhere without something blasting out at you. And learning all the Blondie stuff took up a lot of headspace. And now teaching all the guys that are playing with me this time around is taking up a lot of headspace, and I don't mind doing that. So if I do listen to something, I go back to the classic kind of things. But I've got quite Catholic taste, and a bit of reggae, but I like Mose Allison. The Kinks, big fan of the Faces, and you know, if you're not feeling so great and you've got to go out and be somewhere and you want a little lift, I always put on You Can Make Me Dance, which was their last single, which I think is one of the most up songs ever. But I like, and you know, and all the time of Motown stuff and soul and Stax, I appreciate a good song. That's what kind of gets me going.
You have a good mix.
You went from being a 14-year-old going to a Faces concert to being the bass player of the Faces.
Yeah, just for a bit. And it was Rod didn't do it, which was a drag, but Mick Hucknall did it, who's the lead singer in Simply Red.
Right.
The Faces were always like a great rock band with a great soul singer, and it still was. So playing with Ronnie and Kenny and Ian McLagan, who was my mate, he actually played a tour with the Rich Kids and played on the album. It was a big buzz. And we didn't do that many shows, but the last one was in front of 50,000 people or more at the Fuji Festival in Japan. He was headlining. And yes, it was the band that I used to stand in front of the mirror when I was 14, pretending that I could play, you know, stay with me. to me, music, people would say the Pistols were like a sea change, but I don't believe that. There was stuff before that we all dug in different degrees. You know, there was the Lou Reed Transformer album, the Stooges, and... Mm-hmm. Steve and Paul like the Faces and Mott the Hoople, and John liked Captain Beefheart, and I liked a bit of Captain Beefheart. Me and him both like Can. There was all these things we picked up. But to me, music is like a baton race. You know, the people before are doing the running, and then they give you the baton and you run 100 yards with it, and then you pass the baton on to other people. And in my career, I feel happy that I've got to work with people I dug from before we came along, and also people that came after us. You know, as I said before, I'm mates with the Primal Scream guys and other stuff with them, and Zach Starkey and people like that. So, yeah, well, it's a kind of a mutual sort of rolling wheel of respect somehow, if you're cool in some way or other, you know.
Instead of the circle of life, it's the circle of punk. Glenn?
Well, yeah, but hang on a second. I want to leave you this thought. It might be the circle of life, the circle of thing, but I just walked down the street before I came out because I got a coffee down the road and somebody was rollering their lawn. You know when you cut it with a lawnmower and then you put a roller on to make it go a bit flat? Maybe music's like a kind of a grass roller, you know, and just flattens everything that don't need to be there and just the real things bloom. I think it's a very tenuous kind of example, but it's still early for me.
I love that, Glenn. And I didn't know you did. I didn't know you sang at all, which I don't know why, because you sang what everybody sings in the crowd and has been for 40 plus years. I wanna be anarchy, and you sing on a new album, and I love it.
All right, great. Well, you know, it's not my, you know, I don't pretend to be Sam Cooke or the Great Caruso or something like that. It's something I've worked at. When I first started singing, I wasn't necessarily hip to singing in the best key for me, which I am now. And you work at it. You know, when I worked with Iggy many years ago, we was having dinner and I said, well, it's all right for you. You know, you get to sing your own songs because you've got a great voice. And he got really annoyed with me. And he said, no, he said, I weren't born like this. I worked it. And I've worked at it. And, you know, I think it's kind of a bit more than passable now. But I don't think anybody can sing a lyric and mean it as much as the person who wrote it. So that's what I'm, you know.
Well, Glenn, yeah. I could talk to you all day, but I know you have to go. I know Josie has to go. I don't have a life, so I don't have anywhere to go. But Glenn, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And I want to tell people the new album, Consequences Coming, is coming imminently. Is it streaming yet, or when is it going to be released?
It's out on the 28th, which is Friday. I think you can, Friday, you can stream it.
And you're at the Roxy on Friday also.
Yeah, no, on Saturday, we're on Roxy. So
Saturday.
On the 29th.
On the Roxy on Saturday, and every cool kid's going to be there because you're going to be playing, and that's the coolest, but you also, with Clem Burke of Blondie, with Gilby Clark from Guns N' Roses, Kathy Valentine from the Go-Go's, Fred Armisen, who's the biggest star of all of them, apparently, and so many special guests. I can't imagine. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it should be. So maybe come, you guys come down too.
I'm planning on it.
Well, good man. All right, well, say hello if you do. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Glenn, and nice to meet you.
Yeah, you as well. Perhaps we'll meet up face-to-face soon. Hope so.
Hopefully, maybe Saturday night. Who knows?
Who knows?
All right. And by the way, you have aged better than any of the other Sex Pistols, I just have to say.
Don't know why that is.
Oh, you do have fantastic hair. The best hair.
Again, it's the luck of the draw, you know. I think it's just the natural thing. You know, you can, at my age, you can sort of dye your hair and all that lot, but, you know, it's if you want to go, I mean, Mark looks fine now, but you're going for that look. But if you're trying to look at my age, it's not very convincing. So all I'm trying to do is, in a cool way, try and embrace, and I know it's not a proper English word, but it should be, I'm trying to embrace my elderly-ness, right? Like,
well, I could die happy. I just got roasted by a Sex Pistol. All right. Thank you so much, Glenn.
You've got the whole thing going on there, you know. I'm going for the Englishman abroad in California. Yeah, look at that. I caught the sun at my coach.
You look great, Glenn. You're a delight. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Josie, for being on the show. I love you.
Thank you for having me back.
And everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Josie. Bye.
Thank you.